Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Josh Youth.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we're going to look at how pain we feel in the present may not actually be about the present, but may be an indicator of stuff from our past that needs our attention. And then next, we'll look at Cal Raleigh argues in the New York Times that we need a new revolution in the way we think about one critical area of life. We'll talk about that and so much more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Engaging Culture Podcast. Brian Kiley and Josh Ute with you. And we've narrowly decided not to devote this entire episode to talking about how terrible Super Mario Brothers Galaxy was. We did have a great pre-podcast discussion of this topic, Josh.
It was unkind.
It was not very positive. It was a terrible movie.
Just trash.
The first one was so fun and so good, and this one really made us sad.
Yes.
So I think we can confidently say that that is not going to be the best thing that either of us saw this last week. So,
yes.
Josh, other than Easter, which was, of course, amazing,
right?
What was the best thing you saw this last week?
My daughter is leading worship for the first time tonight at MSM.
Yes, she is.
And so what I saw this last week was not, obviously that's in the future,
right.
it's actually preparing with her and helping her get ready for it and learning the song and gaining some confidence and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of parental discipleship moment, and it was really, really fun.
That is super cool, especially because obviously, like, you're a worship leader yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, if I was helping my child get ready to lead, I'd be like, I don't know, make sure you know the lyrics. But, like, you actually know what you're doing.
Right.
So that's got to be incredibly special for you and her to have that experience working together.
Yeah, it's pretty
and,
fun.
Yeah, she excited? She nervous? How's she
going? Oh, she's incredibly nervous, as she should be.
Yeah.
Because if you're not nervous your first time, you're probably not taking it very seriously. Yes. But she's going to do great.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure she will. I'm sure she will. That's awesome. I love it. My best thing was the UCLA Bruins women's basketball team won the national championship on Sunday, and I am a proud UCLA alum, and I don't follow women's basketball super closely, but the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, which is the Elite Eight's the quarterfinals, was here in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago, so my boys and my dad and I went out and got to see them live. That game was pretty close, actually. They were trailing in the third quarter, but came back and won. Super fun to see them win, advance to the Final Four, hear the fight song. The things. And then, after church on Easter, while we were waiting for our family to come over, we watched the championship game and we fast forwarded most of the fourth quarter because they completely blew them out.
It wasn't even close.
It is always exciting when my beloved alma mater wins a national championship. So, way to go, Coach Corey Close, Lauren Betts, the rest of the UCLA crew on a national title. It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty cool.
We'll be right back. Well, we are back, and Pastor Josh, a couple of weeks ago, you were leading our staff meeting, and you shared a devotional that really impacted me, and I found it to be extremely helpful with just some different things I'm wrestling with. So we thought it would make for great discussion here on the show and on this segment. So can you just lead us through again some of what you shared with us in staff meeting a few weeks ago, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a scar from a recent surgery that became inflamed while doing something completely unrelated. So we were recently on a cruise, and just being out in the sun wearing sunglasses is all it took. That in and of itself wasn't the cause of the pain. It simply awakened something that was already there. So for me, the wound had healed, but the scar still remembered. Our hearts work the same way. So sometimes the thing that hurts us today isn't truly about today. It's a comment, a disappointment, or a conflict can touch an old scar, mm-hmm. a place shaped by past hurt, rejection, failure, or loss. The present moment becomes painful not because it created the wound, but because it revealed it. And Scripture reminds us that God is not intimidated by our scars. In fact, He heals the brokenhearted and binds up the wounds. Notice that God doesn't pretend the wound never existed. He binds it, tends it, and restores it. Yeah. See, Jesus Himself chose to keep His scars after the resurrection. That's one of the most remarkable facets of the resurrection, is that the marks in his hands were not signs of defeat, but proof of redemption. In the same way, the Lord doesn't erase our past. He redeems it. What once wounded us becomes a testimony of his faithfulness. So what does God do with our past? Well, first he exposes what needs healing, not to shame us, but to free us. When old pain surfaces, it may actually be an invitation from the Holy Spirit to let him touch a place we've been protecting. Second, he reshapes our identity. Our scars no longer define us as victims, but as people who have been carried by grace. The past becomes a chapter, not the title of our story. Third, he prepares us for the future. He heals us not just so we can feel better, but so we can move forward without reacting from old pain. Healing gives us the ability to respond with wisdom instead of reflex. So when something triggers an old wound, pause before reacting. Ask, Lord, what are you showing me? What are you healing in me right now? The goal isn't to live scar-free, it's to live healed. And healed people walk into the future with peace, strength, and compassion that only God can produce.
There are so many elements of that I think are so good. And the scar sun analogy really put words to something that I've experienced a fair bit of, and even experienced some recently. And I think just as a very sort of relatable human experience, which is, again, you were in pain being out in the sun on the scar, but like it wasn't the sun that was causing, like the other side of your face was fine, right? Like the
Correct. Sun
was not actually causing pain. Yeah. Rather, it was this like mild disturbance to an area of sensitivity, and that created discomfort. And I think that it's so crazy to me how stuff from our past, even the very distant past, even childhood wounds,
right,
can resurface sometimes. So then you have an experience in your normal adult life, and it kind of feels like it hurts more than makes sense, or it bothers you more than it makes sense, or it even catches your attention more than it feels like it should. And I think even before we get to the like asking the Lord to heal it part,
right,
There's an aspect where I think we can go one of two directions. Number one is you just end up reacting in the moment, which
totally.
You sort of alluded to that, which
yeah.
I don't know about you. That does not tend to lead to great decisions for me.
Like ever.
Right. Yeah. So that's not great. But then the second part is I think we can kind of shame ourselves a little bit. Like, really?
Yeah.
You're doing that? Like, you're letting this bother you? That, like, you're getting in your head about this so much. And certainly, I don't know about you, I have got a very mouthy and verbose inner critic who can sort of tell me those stories a lot. But I think that there's an aspect of this that can actually help us with some self-compassion to kind of go, oh, yeah. Like on some level, you're not going, oh, my, why is my stupid face, why are you hurting? You're
right.
Like, oh yeah, I have a scar there.
Right.
Well, this makes sense.
I recently had a surgery.
Exactly.
Yes.
So to be able to go, oh, that's right, you've got some pain in this area that maybe is not quite resolved yet.
Yeah.
So based on that pain, based on your past experience, yeah, of course you're going to be hurt a little bit by this. Like, that makes sense.
Right.
And I think starting in that self-compassion place allows us to avoid either the reaction or the shame. And that I think puts us in a posture where we can sort of invite God into it.
Absolutely. I think it also allows us to name something that's really important. Oftentimes when we are in conflict with other people, we're not actually in conflict with just that person.
Yeah.
So Peter Scazzaro, let's say his name properly. Peter Scazzaro wrote a series of books, Emotionally Healthy, ... And one of them was Emotionally Healthy Church.
Yep.
And in that conversation, he talks about who else is at the table, who's not actually physically there.
Totally.
And so on average, we have 5 to 10 voices that we carry around from our past with us,
mm-hmm.
just as trauma, influence, or hurt, pain, whatever.
Yeah.
And we're bringing that into a room.
Yeah.
Now, you add, 10 people around a table, they all have their 5. So you have 50 voices speaking into every interaction.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is that if these voices are unchecked, we begin to respond to things that are being said by people who aren't in the room.
Yeah.
Because we hear things through a filter. every single one of us has a filter. Yep. We can't get away from the filter. The issue is not how do we get rid of the filter. It's how do we manage the filter and acknowledge it. And so what we end up doing is we end up looking for what we should be doing, and we end up looking for what that cause of pain really is. Mm-hmm. And when we have that moment, a good point for us to start is just to say, who am I hearing right now?
Yeah.
Because it might be somebody from your distant past. It might be this person is asking a question that they're generally just needing an answer to, but you're hearing it through the filter of past frustrations and past problems. Yep. And you're hearing it as a challenge or as a critique. And they're just, I just need to know what account to charge this to. Like I don't understand why you're responding to me this way. Yeah. And so there is that part for us internally, but also understanding this about other people allows us to pump the brakes on when they react.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, I've hit on something.
Yep.
I need to take a step back and allow them space to process this because this intensity does not match my intensity. Yep. And what I end up doing, and this is a fault of mine, is I will try to match somebody's intensity. Mm-hmm. As a nine, that's a very normal Enneagram niner here. Just try to match the intensity, and that's the completely wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
Because then that ends up, they start chasing each other.
Well, I think it's also possible to be threatened by that intensity. And maybe this is just sort of saying what you're saying in different words.
Right.
You react to that intensity.
Right.
And then,
exactly.
Then you're right. Then you're just sort of chasing each other kind of up the hill of, you know, Mount Crazy here. Where now we're just yelling at each other.
Right.
And so I think that ability, and I'm really glad you brought this up, that ability to not only recognize this in ourselves, but recognize it in others, and to be able to have some compassion in those spaces too. And it's not to say that we're like coddling or babying or whatever, but just that ability to recognize, all right, like you said, I've hit on something here. I need to back up a little bit.
Absolutely.
So then I think to take this a step further and to take it into kind of that like, okay, how might we take these opportunities to see maybe God's wanting to heal something in us. Let's look at it from the perspective of when we notice it in ourselves, not when we notice it in others. What do we do in those moments where we go, man, I'm reacting to something in the present, and we're able to realize, man, this is touching on an insecurity or a past experience or a trauma or whatever. What do we do?
I think we recognize that there's a process. Earlier I said that he binds it, tends it, and restores it. So binding it is like adding sutures. It's closing the wound so that it can't get infected. Tending it is making sure that it's healing properly. Then restoring it is it's back to a functional space. It doesn't mean that it looks the same, but it's no longer being healed. In that process of being healed, it's already fully restored. What we should be recognizing is oftentimes we get stuck in binding or tending, and we don't allow ourselves to recognize or work towards the restoration part. Restoration doesn't always just happen automatically. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the Lord is asking us to grow and mature, and through discipleship, through accountability, through whatever, God is like working us towards a place of healing. So for us in ourselves, if it's still causing pain, it's a great thing to realize, I have not hit restoration yet.
Yeah. Why do you think we get stuck in the tending space?
I think we get stuck because it doesn't require us to do anything.
Amen.
You know, honestly, like it's a very, like, I can remain here and complain about stuff, and I don't have to work on myself. I don't have to risk anything. I don't have to confront anything within me in order to live in the binding and tending.
Yeah.
But in order to get to restoration, we have to deal with some refining. You know, Scripture talks about a refining fire that burns away all the things that are not of Him, and that refining fire is violent. It is a violent metaphor.
Yeah.
It is a painful metaphor. Mm-hmm. It is not a subtle thing, but it requires us to be ready for pain. And we are very pain avoidant, especially in Western culture. Almost more than any other culture, we're very pain avoidant because we've been told that we should— in the pursuit of happiness, that we should be happy all the time and no pain ever. Yeah. And that's just not reality. And so we get stuck in these points that require us to give a lot of effort.
That's certainly true. And it's true in a lot of different areas. I also think there's an aspect of when we're in that tending phase, not only does it not require a ton of us, but it can just be kind of an easy place to wallow. It's an easy way to get attention from people, yeah, to sort of keep focus on yourself, which is a different way of saying get attention from right. people. And I don't want to say, like, there is an appropriate place for that, right? So I'm not yes. in any way suggesting when we're in that tending space, it's somehow wrong or self-aggrandizing to, like, share that with people. No. That's totally appropriate.
Absolutely.
But it's also true that when you're in that kind of stuck and sad space, that's where it's easier to kind of woe is me.
Yes.
Whereas when you're really doing that work with the Lord and with other people of restoring, you know, it's a lot harder. It's doesn't attract as much attention, and it yeah. is, I don't know. It just, it requires so much more of us, I guess.
It does. The temptation is to allow our past to be excuses for poor behavior.
Yeah.
Or to allow excuses for us to be very self-reflective.
Yeah.
And reasons are different than excuses.
Yeah.
I think reasons are great to give people, saying, this is why I responded this way. That's still no excuse, and I should not be allowed to do that, and I apologize.
Yeah.
It gives a, here's why that happened, but that's not an excuse for making that okay.
I think that's a really helpful delineation between reason and excuse. That sense of explanation is really helpful, but to make it clear that I'm not excusing the behavior.
Right. So we're not excusing the behavior. But I do think the final piece of this is that when we can wrestle with the Lord about the things that are hurting us and the things that bring up these old pains, he will reveal areas to us that he wants to mend.
Yeah.
And oftentimes restoration requires us to let go.
Yeah.
And we have to let go of past hurts by forgiving one another. The forgive and forget thing gets misused all the time. Mm-hmm. It's less about forgetting, like, oh, I don't remember that ever happening. It's more of the, I'm not going to hold it against you anymore.
Yeah.
Well, that's the kind of forget that we're talking about. It's forgiving and forgetting. It's releasing it, saying, I'm no longer going to hold this against them.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that costs us our own pride or our own pain
yeah.
within that.
Yeah, the forgiveness can be a part of healing. And then also a continual theme for me that I end up going back to when I experience this, like, oh man, I feel like I'm a little extra sensitive here, or I'm being wounded or whatever. Yeah. I feel like God has called me back to, Brian, are you asking other people to do something that I'm supposed to do for you? Or are you looking
really
to others for what you're supposed to look to me for? You've been in my office enough to know that I've got a million trinkets everywhere. That's sort of,
yes.
Random trinkets is the theme. But one of them is meant to be a very clear visual reminder of that reality
yes.
for me to keep in focus, because it has been such an issue. But I think there's an invitation in that to go, all right, are you looking to, again, other people to fill something I'm meant for?
Yeah. Remember who our God is and what his role is, and yep. just release these things to him, because holding on to past hurts is never going to help you.
Doesn't work great. Doesn't let the scars heal. We'll be right back.
Well, we're back, and yesterday, Pastor Brian, you shared a staff development piece that I found really challenging and really beneficial to me personally. I've been thinking about it for the last 24 hours, and I've actually made some fairly significant changes in my life already based on that. And so can you share a bit with us what you shared yesterday?
Yeah, look at us enjoying each other's staff meeting training so much that we can use them for podcast content. But I'm into this. So I came across an article by Cal Newport in the New York Times about a week and a half ago that I thought was really outstanding. And in addition to it inspiring the training I did yesterday, literally my kids are required to read this article today before
yes.
they can have access to screens. They're on spring break today, and we're going to talk about it as a family tonight or tomorrow. But he starts the article by talking about the idea that today we take diet and exercise for granted. Like, nobody questions that those things are important for our health and well-being, but that it wasn't always that way. He talks about how in 1955, then President Dwight Eisenhower had a heart attack while playing golf, and he was 64 years old. He was the president. He was this sort of picture of strength, and that really got people's attention. And what the White House did was they flew in a doctor by the name of Dr. Paul Dudley White, who was a leading cardiologist who had helped found the American Heart Association. And they basically used it as an opportunity to educate the public about heart attacks and these types of cardiac events and what people could do to reduce their risk. And that was sort of the beginning of it being publicly understood that things like diet impacted your likelihood of having a cardiac event. And that changed society in 100 different ways. 10 years later, a military doctor named Kenneth Cooper published a book called Aerobics, which got a good laugh in the room when I shared that book title. Yeah. And the argument that he presented was novel at the time, and that was that cardiovascular exercise was critical for health. And this was at a time when people were increasingly having sedentary jobs and living car-based lifestyles. And he said, you really need to put aside time to exercise as a key component of not dying. And again, we take this for granted now. Yeah. Cal Newport said longevity, but saying not dying is more fun.
Yes.
We take this for granted, but back then, like, if you exercised voluntarily, it was because you were in the military or you were an athlete. Like, people didn't do this sort of thing. Only about 100,000 people ran for recreation in the United States at that time. 16 years later, the number is 34 million. I don't even know what the number is now, but it is surely higher than that. The point is, these changes happened very quickly in the decades following Eisenhower's heart attack and Dr. Cooper's book. All of these changes, we got the food pyramid, we got the idea of having low-fat things. The running craze took off. Aerobics classes popped up all over the place. It changed society in a bunch of different ways. And the argument that Cal Newport goes on to make in this piece is he says that in our current moment, we face a new crisis, one that affects our minds more than our bodies, the negative impact of digital technology on our ability to think. And he says we need a new revolution where we think about digital technology and what it is doing to our ability to engage in deep cognition. Now, Cal Newport, 10 years ago, wrote the book Deep Work, which I found very helpful. And back then, 10 years ago, he was arguing that things like email and instant messages were degrading our ability to think and to concentrate. And he just sort of made the argument for we need to set aside these things to be able to give time to more thought-intensive tasks. Now, 10 years ago, the distraction possibilities are endlessly greater now than they were 10 years ago. So what I want us to talk about today, Josh, obviously distraction, digital distraction, numbing out with digital things. I mean, it's just everywhere, and opportunities are everywhere. I mean, even in an age of AI, it's like thinking is optional almost. What are some of the problems with this, and kind of how do you see it showing up?
For me personally, the distraction piece is that constant look for the dopamine hit type of a deal that we've talked about ad nauseum as a culture. That's part of it. But the other part is that it's robbing me of being present in day-to-day moments. Yeah. You shared a stat yesterday of there's not 1 hour of uninterrupted work ever in somebody's life.
Yeah. Johann Sari in his book, Stolen Focus, cited a study that said most office workers do not have an uninterrupted hour at any point during their work week, which is wild.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that, and I took that even to go at home. Do I have 1 hour with my family that's uninterrupted by a digital something?
Yeah.
Either for me, for my wife, for my kids.
Yeah.
Is there 1 hour, like, on a consistent basis that we have completely uninterrupted time?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, occasionally if we're playing a game, we can get there. Yeah. But even that, like, our games can't go very long because our kids start to space out like, oh my gosh, this is taking forever, you know? Yeah. And so it's just thinking about that physical presence is so robbed by the digital distractions nowadays.
Yeah.
And I think it's really crucial. What about you?
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of an interview we did on this show a while ago where our guest was talking about the idea of, it was in the context of marriage specifically, and she sort of raised the question in her book, is your phone more interesting than your spouse? Oof. And the truth of the matter is, yes, your phone is more interesting than any human being. Like, that sounds like terrible to say, but it is objectively
true.
Well,
yeah, because it's right? catered it's, directly
it's
to you.
It's entertaining. It's catered directly to you. In an age of AI, you can talk to a robot who right. will always agree with you and be helpful all the time. And this idea of going, yeah, right? And it's this idea of going, we are constantly pulled to, like you said, this dopamine hit of something shiny and flashy and fun and entertaining. And it takes us away from not only presence with family and similar to you, you feel like, man, that uninterrupted family time is something like yeah. we really have to fight for. We have, I mean, all right, everybody, devices away, this and that, the screens are off, whatever. Okay. We're going to go do something, you know?
Yeah.
And it's feels more challenging than it should be. Where I get concerned is not only in that, which is hugely problematic, but also, again, in just our ability to think. Like,
yeah.
deep thinking requires time. Cal Newport cites the idea that Abraham Lincoln, when he was commander-in-chief of the Union Army and president of the United States, would retreat to his cottage for solo time of deep thinking.
Right.
And I don't remember I can't think of a time when I'm like, okay, I'm just going to sit here and think. Now, there are times where I'm facing right. something difficult. I'm like, all right, I want to think through this for a minute. But even then, I'm like, all right, 5 minutes, I'm good. Right. When really this problem could use a bit more, yeah. more brain power. And when we're able to outsource our thinking to AI, when there is constant distraction, I mean, I'm adult diagnosed ADHD, and I shared about that a bit in the meeting yesterday. And I feel like I have to fight so hard to not like pull the ripcord, to like take attention away from a hard task and like, oh, I'll check email. Oh, I'll look at ESPN. Oh, I'll play a word game.
Yeah.
I worry about how that's affecting me. And I figure if it's affecting me, I'm probably not the only one.
Absolutely. I have some ADHD tendencies. I know that's shocking to absolutely yeah. everyone.
Wow, I wouldn't have guessed.
Wow, thank you. I hide it well. No, I don't hide it at all. Like this moment right now. Mm-hmm. So the thing for me has been lately is, why am I going to these other things? Mm-hmm. That why is really, really important, because I'm getting distracted by these things that take away from deep thinking, because I want to fill it with audiobooks, or I want to fill it with podcasts, or I want to fill it with even good things like, yep. A Bema podcast, and like learning about, scriptural things from an Eastern context. Like, these are all good.
Yeah.
None of them are necessarily bad, but also they're not really helping me focus on any one area.
Yeah.
The amount of things that I do while listening to other things
yeah.
is remarkable, and probably should be studied by science, because it should not be the case. this is embarrassing. So working on some music stuff, we're doing a songwriting retreat, which is going to be really fun, really cool. But as I'm working on stuff, I'm also listening to like a book and working on music at the set. Like, that shouldn't be a thing. That shouldn't be happening. And I know I'm not giving either one
yeah.
it's what it needs.
Yeah.
Like, not even close.
Isn't it crazy how we are almost unable to be like fully absorbed in one thing
yeah.
at any given time? Like, I don't play a lot of video games, but like sometimes on my day off or, whatever, I'll just relax and play, NBA 2K or MLB The Show for a little bit. And it's like, this is a state-of-the-art video game on Xbox meant to be incredibly entertaining. And I'm like, well, I'll also watch something while I play. I'm like, that's crazy. Like, you're talking about at least doing something productive, but that sense yeah. of like, productive-ish,
yeah.
but that need to supplement it with additional content, additional something to distract our brains, and that ability to just focus in on what's in front of us.
Yeah.
Man, and you think about so many places in scripture. Study to show yourself approved unto God, 2 Timothy 2:15.
Right.
Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, 1 Corinthians 15:58. Everything that Paul says to Timothy about growing as a leader, like, these things require focus. And I think where I get concerned, even for myself, and certainly get concerned for the next generation, I get concerned for just, all sorts of different types of people, is we are distracted into oblivion by Instagram reels, by really engaging quick content, by games and things like that. And all of a sudden, you know, to quote the Supertones from the 1990, we can't defend our faith because we don't even know it. We say we love his words, but pick a funny way to show it. And the world walks by. We don't have a thing to say. Those high school lyrics get in there deep.
Oh, man.
But it's true.
It
like, we can't
so
think about deep things anymore. And not only does that impact us spiritually, I just think it's bad for society.
It is. But, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about and started making some drastic changes on in my personal life already is what on my phone is so engaging? What do I naturally gravitate towards? Well, it's stupid, meaningless sports news. Nobody needs to read that in real time.
Can't relate.
Yeah. It's stats about different things. It's a dumb color block game. It's like, it's stuff that does not matter.
Yeah.
It's not crucial stuff. So like, I'm not all that consumed by checking my email on my phone. I actually find it tedious and difficult to track on my phone.
God bless you. Teach me your ways.
Have a short attendance span. That helps. Too many words. Won't read it. Text messages. I send people like stream of consciousness text. Brian has been the recipient.
I know. It's where, fun.
Where I, yes, I will send him like 20 texts in a row. Be like, what is happening? Like, gather your thoughts, sir. And so, but even that comes in these short bursts.
Yeah.
I spend time on the stuff that doesn't matter. And so I actually ended up deleting all of the sports apps from my phone.
While I was talking yesterday.
While you were talking. I know, which is a really funny thing to do.
You're not the only person, by the way, on staff who said they started making changes as I was speaking, which I, you know, I'll take it.
You know, well, and part of the reason why is because my attention gets drifted is I will say, oh, I should do that. And then I will completely forget.
No, I understand.
And so it's just like, you. I just got to do this now and take that off. And then I put a time limit on the game, things like 30 minutes a day. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more than enough. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to be fine. And already within one day, I'd noticed how much I grabbed my phone and be like, there's nothing to,
nothing to do here.
Nothing to do here. Like,
yeah,
that's 90% of the apps on my phone are functional.
Yeah.
They're not really distraction apps
where
I removed the five distraction apps that I had and put a severe time limit on the other one. So it's already I'm finding a difference. What are some things that you've done?
Yeah. And these are things we can do that are not that complicated, but can really make a big difference. And I'll be the first to say, and I know you would agree with this for you. Like, I am such a work in progress on this. I'm not anywhere near where I want to be. Distraction still is way more of a thing than I wish it was. But I mean, just a few things. I mean, I realized a while ago for lots of reasons, I just needed to take a break from social media. So I'm locked out. And I do not rely on my own willpower, by the way. I have the Freedom app, which locks me out of all social media and locks me out of email on my phone. So that if I, like, the number of steps I have to go through to access email, or if I wanted to go on social media, like, it's very cumbersome. And there have been a couple of times where it's a little embarrassing where I'm in public and really need something on my email and people are waiting on me. And I'm like, let me download the email app and disable this thing and I'll get back to you. But that has really helped with the compulsive checking. I have a handful of apps that are functional on my home screen. Anything else, including Safari, including ESPN, including any other app I would want to use for recreation, I have to search for. So it gives me that little extra check to go, all right, do I really want to do this right now? Is this really helpful? Or can I maybe, you know, set it aside? Or am I just, am I trying to escape something that's actually important?
Yeah.
Right. I use Endel, which music wise just helps with focus. I find that app to be really, really helpful. And just to return back to the Freedom app, I don't use this feature a ton, but there are definitely times where I'm like, all right, if I'm say working on a sermon, there are a handful of websites I might use for sermon prep and those are on an okay list, but everything else is blocked. So I literally cannot use the internet. And Freedom has a like locked mode where literally the only way you can turn it off is if you uninstall the app. So so that, you know, that has helped where I go, all right, I'm an hour of complete focus. Then I'll give myself a 5-minute break and come back. But And my whole thing, and this is something I emphasized for the staff yesterday, and we can kind of wrap up with this and get any final thoughts from you, is the point is not productivity.
No.
Like, it's not so I can work more and produce more. The point is so that I can create time for things that matter. I used the example yesterday of I want more time in my life for unhurried conversation with people that I care about.
Yeah.
And there's not enough of that because I'm constantly doing a bunch of tasks, and these tasks are taking longer because I'm distracted. I want more time for pleasure reading. I want more time for exercise. I want more, and yes, I want more time to do the things God has called me to do at work with excellence. So it's a whole life thing.
Absolutely.
Not a, how do I maximize my productivity?
Yeah. And for me, my biggest thing is not so much productivity as I'm a pretty productive person. It usually comes in spurts, you know, the hyper-focus ADHD thing, but it is presence.
Yeah,
I want to be present with wherever I'm at.
Yeah,
if I'm doing something creative, I want to be fully present and engaged in that creative endeavor.
Yeah.
If I'm hanging out with my kids, I want to be fully present and being with them. If I'm with my wife, I want to be fully present and with her.
Yep.
And I've recognized... and my wife has gently reminded me many times, but I recognize that I drift in and out of presence all the time.
Easy to do.
And it's purely a drift. It's not like today I will like to ignore my family. Like that's not what happens, but drifting in and out of because of the digital distraction, and I want to be present. Yep. And so one of the things I've also done is my drive into work every morning is silent. But I drop off my daughter at school. It's 12 minutes from her school to the church.
Yeah.
And I don't turn on the radio. I don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And it allows 12 minutes of deep thinking about whatever. Now, sometimes it's about stuff that doesn't matter.
Sure.
Like not everything we think is crucial to life.
Yeah.
You know, I think yesterday was about the way that our grapes taste from Costco and why do they taste so weird? I know.
But like that time just to think.
Just
be with your thoughts.
Just to be with their thoughts. And what it... I now like crave that time.
Yeah.
And that has become almost a spiritual practice for me of just sitting in the silence.
Yeah.
And now I should probably have some sort of spiritual thoughts beyond grapes.
I'll say this, especially for those who would be starting off with a silence type practice. I think it's steps. You think about grapes for a while and then you can think about deeper things.
Yeah.
And like truly, like it's just part of the
process.
So anyway, we'll link to the article in the show notes. Really encourage you to think about, this is what I encouraged the staff with yesterday. What is stealing your time? And I don't mean what are you wasting time on? I mean, it feels like it is taking your time and you don't want to give it. And then what's a small step you can do to reduce that time stealing this week so you can give your attention to the things that matter to you. We'll be right back.
Well, Pastor Brian, we are going to play a brand new game.
Oh, boy.
And the brand new game is Explain It Like You're Wrong. I'm going to give you a topic, and then you just have to explain it. And the more wrong you are, the better it is.
So I'm explaining how whatever you say works or whatever.
Right.
But I have to be confident, but I have to be wrong. As wrong as possible.
As wrong as possible. And you don't know what I'm going to say to you.
This is full on improv right here.
This is full on improv.
Okay. All right. Well, here we go.
All right. Pastor Brian, explain to us how radio works.
Josh, everybody knows how radio works, and everybody knows. I don't know why you're making me explain this to the people, because radio depends on the existence of millions and millions of radio fairies who, when anybody, whether it be people such as ourselves, yes, I know this isn't radio, it's a podcast, but same idea, or some DJ somewhere, when they speak into their microphone, little worker bee radio fairies pick up those little sound bites. They run down the microphone, through the cords, up the tower, which seems very inefficient, but whatever. And they've kind of got like a flying squirrel thing going on where they jump off of the tower, extend out their little radio fairy arms, and they float all over into people's ears, one little piece, one little bite at a time, so that those who are listening to the radio can hear everything that is being said.
So how fast do these guys move?
So fast. It is almost instantaneous. It is from the moment that the words come out of the mouth into the microphone, into the ear. I mean, we're talking less than a second. Serious land or air speed records being set by the radio fairies.
I feel like this deserves one of the NBC's The More You Know stars.
It does. I'm here to educate the people, Josh, because if they're wondering, how does the noise get from the studio to their ears? See, and here's the thing about the radio fairies, that the greatest trick they ever pulled is convincing the world they didn't exist. They want you to believe that it's waves and things like that.
Yeah.
Not true.
Out of curiosity, are they unionized?
They are, actually. That's why radio is going away quickly, is they've, unions are great, but in this case, they've really made a lot of demands, and they want to fly less, sit around more, and it's creating some problems.
Well, what's the healthcare package for a union?
It's very, very strong. Better than ours, that's for sure. They're for profit. We're nonprofit, so they do a lot better in that regard.
All right.
That was so stupid. I'm sorry, listener. Anyway, I'm not cut out for improv. All right, Josh. Mine is the other day I stopped by Target on the way home from work. I grabbed some milk and I went up to the scanner and I scanned the scanner and voila, on the screen, it showed me the product I was buying and the price. How on earth does that scanner work to show me the groceries I'm buying right on the screen and exactly how much they cost?
It's AI, Brian. It's artificial intelligence. It knows all. Okay. It is not bound by simple items.
Okay.
It actually knew what you were going to buy before you even walked up. This is just performative at this point. As you are walking up from the milk aisle, it has followed you throughout the store. It knows how you got there. It knows what steps you took, how many steps you took, what you looked at but didn't purchase, so it can advertise to you later.
Maybe that's why the coupons are.
That's why the pop up. You go up, you scan the milk,
air quotes
galore. You're not scanning the milk. It already knew what is going there, but it didn't want to freak you out and charge you ahead of time, because you would then catch on to it that it is predicting and, you know, essentially dictating what it is you're going to buy.
So what I'm hearing from you is that the AI already knew what I was going to buy when it walked in, even before the thought was so much as in my head. Perhaps it even followed me from the office and even implanted the idea that I needed milk in my head.
Now, do you have a phone in your pocket?
I sure do. And so, okay, so there we go. That's tracking. And then it knew exactly what I was going to buy. But if I'm hearing you correctly, there's nothing actually happening when the scanning takes place. It's just a blinking red light and a beep-boop noise. Because it already knew, and it was just waiting for me to come up with the screen.
It is purely performative. It's a lot like TSA. It's not really doing much. It's just there to inconvenience you and slow you down so you don't steal it.
I think some people waiting in line in Houston a couple of weeks ago would say differently about TSA. But point taken, it's just there to slow me down.
It's just there to slow you down. And it's really just there because it helps you feel better, and it's loss prevention. It's a way to say, hey, you need to give us your money, but instead of you walking up and it already knowing and freaking you out, because wouldn't that freak you out?
It
you
would walk, freak me out.
You didn't even take stuff out of the cart. It's like, you owe me $47. Like,
yeah.
Wait, but I haven't scanned anything yet. It's like, we know what you're buying,
sir. We know what you're buying. Yeah, that would be pretty
it's loss prevention. And so it's just really doing that.
Yeah.
The blinking lights, the lasers aren't real.
It's just a light show.
Yeah.
lasers aren't real.
They sure are. And all birds are drones. We know this, Brian. They are following us around. The phone in your pocket, the birds overhead, they're all around working together to formulate what it is that you're buying, because you need the milk, Brian.
You know, Josh,
your bones are so weak, you need the milk.
I do. Josh, you know, my wife often tells me that I'm a terrible liar, that if I lie, I immediately break. And I remind her there are worse personality flaws out there. There are character flaws out there that, like, you know, you can trust I'm not lying because I'm terrible at it. I think what we learned in this segment, Josh, is that neither you nor I are great at lying about the invention of these products. So whether it was radio fairies or AI fake blinking lights, I think we've educated the people on a whole lot of nonsense just now.
We're going to start our own QAnon channel.
We're not great liars, which, you know, for a couple of pastors, there are worse things.
There are worse things.
Thanks for listening, especially for enduring this last segment. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye. Thank you.